And then in 1977, the season before winning the Cup, we played at Gosforth and lost 3-0.
Yes.
And Peter Butler missed for once a lot of kicks, I remember. And you were in that team. Do you remember that game?
Very rare for Butts to do that, isn't he? Yes. Yeah. Well, you know, we always say that it's not the kicker's job to win games for you. You know, there are many examples. You know, you just never blame the kicker if you lose a game. But I know Butts would have been distraught. But yes, I do remember that. It was a big trip, a long trip up. I particularly remember it because it's the trip where my magic skills became known, because it was a long, boring coach journey, and I remember entertaining the boys with my newfound hobby of close-up magic on the bus and at the hotel, and having to run through my entire repertoire of tricks, which weren't a lot in those days, but you know what? I could actually do the same ones I'd done to them on the bus, and they wouldn't remember, and I would do them again. I don't know whether that's what put them off, and the fact we lost, they were still baffled and thinking about the tricks. But we had a great time up there, and gosh, 3-0. Was it really 3-0? I'd forgotten that. But I do remember losing to them, which made the victory back at King's Home even sweeter the following year.
Yeah.
Which you'll no doubt be coming on to.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you first came to play at Gloucester, what was it like? I mean, you were a Scot from a fairly exotic background, if you don't mind my saying so.
Yeah.
Public school boy.
Yep.
Gloucester.
Yes. Yeah.
I know. The whole ethos so different.
A lot of contrasts there, aren't
yeah.
there?
Yeah. How was it?
I had to learn very quickly.
Yeah.
And I had to learn what the shed was all about. Yeah. And I had to learn how you had to be honest. You can't hide from the shed. And I totally embraced the culture of Gloucester rugby. It took me a while to get involved, but once you appreciate the history and the tradition and the great players that have gone before you and the responsibility of wearing the shirt,
yeah.
it just made me realise that this was almost more than a game, because you're not playing for yourself, you're playing for a city. Mm-hmm. And I quickly absorbed that. And, you know, running out wearing the shirt for the first time, gosh, sends shivers up my spine now, really.
Yeah.
The build-up to the game, in the changing room, hearing the noise outside, and of course you didn't go out on the pitch in those days, you know, you did your warm-up in the changing room.
Mm.
And then running out to the roar was just fantastic, absolutely fantastic. And I think it totally inspired you. It's often been said the shed is our 16th man. And I truly believe that, you know, to play in front of the shed gives you an enormous lift. And yes, I quickly absorbed the culture of Gloucester rugby and realised the responsibility I had, not just to myself and my teammates.
So that must have helped those trips to Pontypool on a foggy Tuesday night.
Definitely.
Or all the way up to Gosforth.
Definitely. Putting your body on the line was something you just had to accept you were going to do, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was great to play in a team where you knew you were going to be looked after. There were so many great players in the team. You knew if you went down on the ball, they'd be there to help you. They'd be driving over, they'd be looking after you.
Yeah.
And if there was any nonsense, you knew it would be sorted out.
Yeah, because the pack was the heart, always the heart of the Gloucester
team.
I was
very, very lucky to play in a Gloucester pack with so many great names. And to find out, as I said, about the tradition of Gloucester as being a hotbed and a bastion of strong, forward-dominated packs, which, of course, means that the current woes of the Gloucester team, which we may touch later on, make it so difficult to accept, really, you know, that Gloucester, at the moment, doesn't have the forward dominance that it should have.
Mm-hmm. Should we go on to the North American tour that you were telling us about earlier?
Yes, the North American tour, indeed. Well, touring is obviously a part of rugby culture, although I don't know if tours these days have quite the same ethos as they did then. It was generally regarded that a tour would be a jolly, first and foremost, with some rugby thrown in. And so it was on the American tour. It was one of the first big tours that Gloucester undertook, and we had a lot of fundraising before it, a lot of local sponsorship.
and we took a large tour party, including a United team as well, and quite a few committee men, over to the Midwest. And we played, Chris will probably tell me the teams we played, but I can remember playing in Chicago, I can remember playing in Indianapolis, and I can remember fantastic welcomes back then, because rugby in America was in its infancy then, and of course it's still a game that struggles to compete with the main American sports now. But back then we had fantastic welcomes from the Americans who were playing rugby, and we were really well looked after. I think we won all our games, as was to be expected, but we were taken to visit things like the Indy 500 racetrack, and we were treated to going down into the pits. We visited the Buckeyes football stadium, that's the Ohio University football team. And generally speaking, we had our eyes open to a different sporting culture. And as I say, the Americans really did make us feel very welcome.
And this was in 1977, at the end of your first year with the club?
It was the end of the 77 season. So we went, I think that would have been in May, April, May sometime. It was just after our season ended. Mm-hmm. So yes, I got very fond memories of that, and lots of stories that probably can't be told.
But one or two
or
that can.
Retold. What goes on what goes on tour, John, stays on tour. You should know that.
Well, I've heard it several times before. Every player says the same.
Yes, but one or two of them then reluctantly let something slip.
Well, so there were various things, I suppose. Things were off the field that you tend to remember. Here's, I mean, a story. We were delayed at Chicago Airport on the way back. And my little hobby of magic was becoming known then. So we were sitting in the airport lounge, bored to tears. I was doing a few tricks for the boys. And suddenly Burton stood up on a bench next to me and said out loud to everyone in the lounge, "Ladies and gentlemen, all the way from England, one of the world's greatest magicians, John Simonet." And I went, "Burton, for crying out loud, what are you doing?" But luckily, I had something with me. And I stood up and I did 10 minutes, probably one of my first public shows, at O'Hare Airport in the departures lounge, courtesy of M. Burton Esquire. So actually, it was great fun. I didn't mind doing it.
It took a lot of courage, I should think.
I did the cigarette trick. People who know me will know what the cigarette trick is. And I did a card trick, a sort of find the lady thing, you know.
Did you pass a hat round after?
I don't think they did, but got lots of cheers and a big round of applause. And, you know, yeah, it helped kill the time, so I didn't mind that at all. So, yeah, that's a memory from that tour.
I imagine he had a habit of dropping people in.
He did, and he's just one of the great characters, not just of that era, but of Gloucester rugby. Mm-hmm. And I was very privileged to play with Mike back then. He always used to say to me, "Simonet, I don't need your fancy degrees, you know." I did. I'm a secondary modern boy from Longlevens, and I don't need your fancy degrees to be a success. And boy, has he proved that right with what he's achieved in business. So fair dues to you, Mike.
Mm-hmm. Any other stories?
Of the tour in particular?
Yes.
Let me think. None that are coming to mind on the spot here. Maybe we'll come back to it and your webmaster can edit it in.
Okay.
Yeah, we can do that, can't we? Mm-hmm.